I'm Hugo Rifkind, and today I'm going to be unpacking Kemi Badenoch's party conference speech. It was her first speech to party members and her biggest opportunity to date to show the party's direction of travel and to put to bed, at least temporarily, questions over her leadership. She put the economy at the centre of the speech, setting out a golden rule that half of all money saved from cuts must be put towards driving down the deficit. The other half would go towards spending or cutting taxes to grow the economy. But the biggest announcement by far was a pledge to abolish stamp duty.
Conference, stamp duty is a bad tax. It is an unconservative tax. The last Conservative government cut stamp duty for thousands of home buyers. But now we must go further. We must free up our housing market, because a society where no one can afford to buy or move is a society where social mobility is dead. So I have looked at the stamp duty thresholds to see where we can change them. I have looked at the rates you have to pay to see if we can lower them. I have decided that we can't, because that simply wouldn't be enough. Conference, the next Conservative government will abolish stamp duty on your home. I stand for stronger borders and a stronger economy, so that the young can fulfil their potential, the old can live out their years in dignity, and everyone can achieve their dreams to own a home, run a business, raise a family. This is the Britain I stand for. If it is the Britain you stand for, then stand with me and let's build it together.
Well, there we go. That was Kemi Badenoch's first party conference speech there in Manchester, her first speech as leader. Nothing works without a strong economy was the refrain, and there was a smattering of policy announcements, with the big one coming towards the end of abolishing stamp duty. Let's get some reaction now from Times Radio's political editor, Anna Mihailova. Hello, Anna.
Hi, Hugo.
Thanks for being with us. Abolishing stamp duty, that's quite a big deal, isn't it?
Yes, it's quite the rabbit out of the hat. She said it's an unconservative tax. I mean, just to give you an idea of how much this would cost in the past year, stamp duty receipts were about £14 billion. So that is quite a big chunk of money. She has also announced this golden rule that, coupled with a promise of £47 billion of savings of benefits and other places, she would put half of that into lowering the debt burden and half into tax cuts, which presumably includes this stamp duty pledge. So yes, that was the big announcement. I came out of the hall just now. I rushed over to the stand to be here in time, and I got given, I don't know if you can see it, this pamphlet that the Conservatives have printed, like a sort of like a free newspaper where the headline inside is "Tough Choices, Real Discipline, Clear Plans." So there you are. I think that speech was really speaking to the crowd. I mean, there's nothing more like Conservative red meat than a stamp duty tax cut, although ironically it is all her predecessors that repeatedly raised stamp duty. What's interesting about these speeches is it is one of the only chances the leader of the opposition gets to speak to the country when people are listening, and there's a higher chance of actually grabbing the headlines. And it struck me that it was a very internally focused speech. I think it was much more about speaking to the people in the room and the Conservative faithful than wider in the country.
Sure. Well, I mean, look, she's in the process of leaving the hall now. She's accompanied by her husband. There are a lot of flags, although obviously not quite as many flags as there were at the Labour Party conference, probably because people had to bring their own. I'm also joined now by the Times columnist Seb Payne and assistant editor at The Spectator, Isabel Hardman. Seb, I'll come to you first. Did that do the job she wanted it to do, which was basically safeguard her own future, at least until May?
I would say actually that did do the job pretty well. I think it's probably a good day to be Kemi Badenoch and a not so good one to be Robert Jenrick, because the speech, as Anna was just saying, was very much about the party, you know, tickling the bellies of Conservative activists with the sort of things they like to hear. But the thing that struck me the most, as well as obviously the huge rabbit out of the hat in terms of stamp duty, was how Kemi Badenoch came across, because I think most people who will have seen her in broadcast interviews will think she comes across as sometimes a bit tetchy, a bit grumpy, whereas in that speech she was actually very relaxed, quite funny at times, and it was a completely different side of her. And there is a question you might say of why is that just suddenly emerged now. But in terms of her standing in the party, I imagine given the fact she's managed to abolish a tax that many Conservatives think is very regressive and is very bad, I think she's probably in a pretty good position now.
Isabel, was there a bit of a kind of, I don't know, a sort of buried lead there that sort of what she wanted to do was attack the direction of the country since 1997, going all that way back, but she didn't quite have the opportunity to do it. So she talked about a whole bunch of wrongs that maybe a lot of listeners are going to think, you know what, that was your fault.
Yeah, I mean, particularly when she was talking about the problems with housing affordability. I think we are still a bit too close to a Conservative government for people to be able to listen to that without saying, well, whose fault is that, guys? Look, I mean, the stamp duty announcement was very eye-catching. We're all going to be talking about it. It is an annoying tax, particularly, I suppose, if you're Angela Rayner, a very annoying tax. But I wouldn't say it's the tax that is sort of named frequently as holding up the economy. So, you know, the thing that Kemi Badenoch herself has actually attacked the government on far more is the rise in national insurance contributions. Mm. And, you know, people who are struggling with the cost of living would say that actually, you know, those, and I'm not talking about people on sort of high incomes in a kind of Liz Truss plea, but people on sort of medium incomes would say that actually they are paying a lot in income tax as well. So I wouldn't say it would sort of move the dial in terms of people thinking, oh, the Conservatives are really on my side. Perhaps if you're thinking of moving house, but I wouldn't say it's going to kind of sweep the country with excitement. But yeah, I mean, I thought she was, you know, she's got a really good giggle, hasn't she? And I've noticed this at Prime Minister's questions a few times where she's sort of briefly relaxed and had this great giggle, and then gone back to being, either sort of not very nimble in terms of dealing with Keir Starmer's, answers, or as you say, being quite tetchy. And we definitely saw her enjoying herself today, I think, for the first time.
Yeah, I think giggling Kemi Badenoch is definitely an improvement. Anna Mikhailova, look, she mentioned reform in passing, but this was almost a unique conference speech from a party leader this year, Rand, where the enemy here was Labour. The enemy here was the government. It wasn't reform at all. Were you surprised by how little reform was there?
I was surprised. As you say, we've had Nigel Farage mentioned in every other leader speech, but that was an obvious pointed thing to do by Kemi Badenoch. She only had one small reference and otherwise mostly focused on Keir Starmer. Now, there's one way of looking at it, which is almost wishful thinking. Is she operating in a bit of a vacuum where she's ignoring the polling and the fact that there is the challenge of reform? But I think actually her main message here was to try and focus, redirect her party back onto the path of being seen as the party of sound money, and try and paint both Labour and reform as parties that voters would not want to trust with their finances. And it does speak to something, because when you look at the polling, the one area where the Conservatives do tend to perform a bit better still is on the economy. So I think that's where they have decided there is a chance to exploit and gain an advantage.
And look, in sheer performance terms, Anna, it seemed to me that she changed gear after that stamp duty announcement. Until then, there were bits that were funny, but there were bits that were a bit hesitant. The sort of the roll call of her colleagues at the beginning, it always sounds a bit needy when people do that, in that they're saying, I love you, so you have to love me. But then when she said that, and she suddenly had the hall behind her, you sort of saw a completely different kind of leader. Was it just me, or did you think that?
I think being in the hall, people liked the name calling, actually, and people, don't forget, because she also referenced activists and people on the doorstep, that's a lot of the people who come to party conference are exactly that kind of person. And you do need to, especially with the local elections looming in May, which is such a crucial point for the party, that she really did need to praise those people and act sort of generous on that front. But look, I mean, it is preaching to the crowd, really. What struck me in terms of differences in approach from Sunday, when she gave her first speech, was that on Sunday she was introduced by Matthew Saeed, who said the Conservatives need to show contrition to be forgiven by the public effectively and to be listened to again. And in that speech she did say, she listed a few things that she thought the Conservatives had done wrong. This time there was none of that. She was praising the Conservative record of 14 years. So I thought that was an interesting shift, and again very much was welcomed by the crowd. But the question is, will that fall on deaf ears with the country?
Yeah, who knows? Maybe 3 days of contrition is enough. Thank you very much indeed, Anna. Thank you, Seb Payne. Thank you, Isabel Hardman. Thanks very much indeed, all three of you, for your time. Now, look, one of the features of this year's Tory Party Conference has, of course, been its obsession with Margaret Thatcher. But Thatcher's first year as leader in opposition to Harold Wilson was difficult, and she failed to make an impression on the public. What comparisons can be made between her first year and Kemi Badenoch's first year? And what can Badenoch learn about turning that around? Well, I'm joined now from Manchester by Nigel Fletcher, political historian for the Centre for Opposition Studies. Hello, Nigel.
Hello, Hugo.
And also by Tina Gowdrin, author of a new book, The Incidental Feminist, Friend, Foe or Femme Fatale, The Truth About Thatcher. Hello, Tina.
Hello, Hugo.
Thank you both for being with us. Nigel, look, both leaders took over the leadership miles behind Labour in the polls, but on both occasions, the Labour lead on both occasions was pretty weak, right?
Yes, but I think these Thatcher comparisons are really quite interesting, because one of the secrets about Kemi Badenoch, and I've been speaking to quite a few people about this week, is that I think she's a closet political historian herself. She does seem to have gone into quite a lot of the history of that time. So what often happens when people compare themselves to Margaret Thatcher is they're thinking of Thatcher in her pomp. They're thinking of Thatcher as she is remembered as this sort of great all-conquering hero. And that's usually where the iconography comes from. And on the merchandise stand here at the conference, you know, you've got the Thatcher mugs and the whiskey and all these other things that are going on here, connected to her centenary. But I think Kemi Badenoch actually has a more subtle understanding of the fact that, as you say, Margaret Thatcher was not an all-conquering hero when she took over the leadership. In fact, when she became leader, Dennis Healey stopped a Conservative in the corridor in the Commons and sort of said, you know, you'll be out of power for a generation. This was seen as a wildly eccentric thing for the Conservative Party to have done. And she didn't really make much headway in those early years. So I think when Kemi Badenoch sort of is invoking the memory of Margaret Thatcher, she's doing so in a subtly different way to perhaps the way other Conservative leaders have done it, in that she is saying that, you know, opposition is a long slog, and the early results don't always come through. And more particularly, she's also, I think, taken on board the approach to policy formation. But I think the trouble she's having is that opposition usually gives you the luxury of time. There are very few things that opposition gives you that are on the upside. But one of the advantages you do have is that you usually have a little bit of time to regroup. And she doesn't have any time.
Understood. Look, Tina, like Badenoch, Thatcher was, as Nigel said, virtually unknown to the public when she took over the leadership. How did she change that? How did she raise her profile?
Well, I think, first of all, we've got to accept that, not unlike today, the Conservative Party, when Margaret Thatcher took over, had a woman problem and a class problem. So I think that's where she started from. And I think she had a real uphill battle. And I'm not sure I think that things have changed that much, except that I would say, as the daughter of an immigrant, that I also think the Conservative Party has a race problem as well. So I think that what we're looking at really is the beginning of something which really could, as we know, could go either way. And in the first year hasn't looked so great for her. And I think what we should also take into account is the fact that Margaret Thatcher had a skilled team of people behind her. You know, she had a marketeer in Tim Bell. She had Gordon Rees as a sort of former TV producer, and she had Ronnie Miller as her speechwriter. So she had clearly put together a talented team of people who all rallied around her and helped her. I'm not sure that I see that Kemi has the same thing going on at all.
Tina, Badenoch is being sort of stalked for the leadership by Robert Jenrick. Did Thatcher have that kind of situation with anybody?
I don't think that she had the same issues in the sense that she didn't have one person. Certainly, we all know she had several. I mean, the list is long of people who wanted the leadership when she took it over. So I don't think she was stalked by one person in particular. But certainly when she took over, and then when she took over as Prime Minister, she certainly had a cabinet full of people who thought they could do her job better than she could. So I don't suppose I think it's particularly different today, except to say that I think there are many fewer talented individuals in the shadow cabinet today than there were then for her.
Nigel, when Thatcher took over, the Liberals were gaining in the polls. Today, Kemi Badenoch has the Liberals to worry about, but also Nigel Farage and Reform UK. How similar is that scenario of sort of surging previously minority parties?
Well, it's not precedented in terms of that Thatcher period. As you say, the Liberals were sort of recovering. In the 70s, they had a little bit of a renaissance. You know, they thought their moment had come in the mid-70s. But there was nothing like what we're seeing now with Reform absolutely surging as something of a political phenomenon. And the only real comparison under Thatcher was when she was in office with the SDP Liberal Alliance. And, you know, we have to try and remember now that they surged to 50% in the polls at one point and were ahead of both Labour and the Conservative Party. So there was a real worry then that they were going to break the mould. But in terms of the time in opposition, she in some ways had a much more straightforward task. As you said at the start, Labour were not wildly popular after the 1974 elections. Obviously, they then changed their leader and James Callaghan came in. And they went into the 79 election after the winter of discontent, obviously, in a very poor position. But they were fairly weak all the way through that parliament, losing their majority. So it's not comparable to that situation, because in those circumstances, when the government became more unpopular, it was almost inevitable that the Conservatives would then rise in the polls. What we're seeing now is the government is becoming extremely unpopular and the Conservatives are not benefiting. There is another viable party that is cleaning up that discontent. And that's something which most leaders of the opposition really haven't had to deal with in modern times.
Thank you very much indeed. That is Nigel Fletcher there and Tina Gowden as well. And Tina's book, The Incidental Feminist, is out now.